Welcome, everyone, to our Wednesday edition of BAMS Radio as we're going to wrap up the Southern Mississippi Golden Eagles win for the University of Alabama as they move to 4-0, and they are going to, and the SEC home opener is upon us as the Ole Miss Rebels are coming to town to Bryant-Denny Stadium, and they're about as big an underdog as the Southern Miss Golden Eagles were last week. But we are bringing you another edition of BAMS Radio. We really appreciate all the support. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at BAMS Radio. We do this each and every week. It's the same cast of characters. It's a labor of love for us. Of course, I'm Drew DeArmond, your co-host, also a co-host of Talkin' Ball and ESPN 97.7 The Zone Radio in Huntsville, Alabama. And soon to be Dr. Thomas Watts, the wizard. He's always the guy behind the curtain out in the port city of Mobile, making things happen and producing this show, doing a great job. Also giving us his thoughts a lot of times, just like the RPO discussion we recently had. Great stuff that I know a lot of people really enjoyed, and Thomas does an outstanding job. And then, of course, our third amigo from, 88 to 93, a part of the Alabama Crimson Tide, and that is William Redfish Barton. I should say 89 to 93. I don't want to make him feel older. But 89 to 93, a part of the Crimson Tide, and he won a national championship ring in 1992 under Coach Gene Stallings, and he is with us as always. William, good evening, man. How are you?
Doing great, Drew. How are you, man?
Doing pretty good. And I guess the first thing to say is I know Alabama came in with great expectations this season. There's been some consternation. I think some of it was the usual hot takes and overreaction. But I thought, and we talked about this last week, you were a part of a lot of wars with Southern Mississippi. Southern Miss came in, good offensive football team, but Alabama took care of them in a workmanlike fashion. And what many people believe may have been their best performance in all three phases. The only negative coming out of the game was a couple more injuries. But I guess your thoughts, first of all, on how this team played offensively. I thought it was probably the best game for that Alabama offensive line that we've seen so far.
Yeah, I thought it was probably the most complete game, in all three phases. The defense, I think, got better and picked it up a notch. And, I thought the offense, let's be honest. I mean, Southern Miss, like we talked about last week, they were overmatched from a talent and physicality standpoint. But, liked what I saw out of the coaching staff on both sides of the football. You're starting to see Najee Harris get a little bit more confident each week and start running with more authority. Thought Sark had another really good game plan, got everybody involved. The yardage may not have been there, but certainly the touchdowns were for Tua and those wide receivers. And, the offensive line seemed to be a little bit more, imposed their will a little bit better in the running game and did some good things in pass protection. Thought the defense especially was good to see Christian Harris, back, looking more like he was playing fast and, had a full understanding of the game plan. So, I saw a lot of good things. Got to see some more, flashes from Christian Barmore. So, you hated to see DJ Dale get dinged up, but I don't think that's going to be anything that keeps him out for a certain, any length of time, maybe a week or two. But, I thought it was a great performance all the way around and a good tune-up for their SEC home opener against Ole Miss.
Well, and the injuries have been so concerning. You talked about DJ Dale. Looks like he has a strained patella tendon. I'm probably not going to play this week. He is trying to practice, but I think they may hold him out for Texas A&M as Alabama's got a bye coming up next week on the 4th, and then they will be in preparation for Texas A&M. But then Will Reichert gets hurt. He has a hip flexor. I'm hearing that likely the earliest we may see him return is Texas A&M. You don't want it to be something that lingers. And it's, concerning because I think he was getting ready to take over the punting duties as well. It's the first time I can really remember an Alabama kicker getting injured. How big a concern should it be about Will Reichert's absence right now?
Yeah, if it's in his kicking leg and it's a hip flexor, that's a tough thing for a kicker to overcome and manage, just because that is one of the main muscles, used in a kicking motion. And it's a slow injury for a non-kicker. You know, it's something that lingers. You know, I know they've got, a lot better sports medicine and rehab and recovery methods at their disposal. But, you know, historically, that's a slow healing injury. It's something that can be re-aggravated very easily. Probably not a good idea for him to punt anytime soon, for sure. But having to, wind that leg up and kick extra points and field goals until it's 100%, and it's going to be a while before it is going to be a painful thing for him. I don't know if they want to go the lidocaine toradol route with him or not. Not something that's, I would liken it to a pulled hamstring on a skill player. I mean, it's something that can linger all season long. It can get re-aggravated real easily. And, certainly something to pay attention to. I mean, I don't think that, Alabama's going to be in a situation, for the next few weeks, especially after watching Texas A&M on Saturday, where it's going to be a dire situation where he might be forced into action unless he's absolutely ready. But it's certainly something to watch. I mean, it's for lower leg stuff that doesn't involve a partial or a complete tear, it's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah, and if and when he does return, and I think we expect him to at some point, would you think maybe that Joseph Bullivas will take over the kicking off? And as you said, they're going to continue to try to develop Skylar DeLong and get him more consistent and let him handle the punting?
Yeah, I mean, I would let Bullivas and DeLong stay out there as long as they possibly can afford to, just to, give him a chance to get that thing totally healed. And, it's one of those deals where, it could heal and everything could be clicking right along. And then, the first, real cold and rainy game that they have, that thing's got a tendency to stiffen up and get tight. And you want to make sure that, he's fully warmed up and flexed. But it's something to really pay attention to. I had it when I was at Alabama, and, back then it was just called a pulled groin that wasn't as technical as a hip flexor. They've even got a surgical procedure now for it. That's the old, sports hernia deal that you hear about now. And, you just want to, hope that it heals quickly. This is our, first chance to see how quickly he can bounce back from an injury. But it's certainly something to pay attention to. It can be a nagging injury that lingers for quite some time.
And I guess in hindsight, it's a good thing Coach Saban kept Joseph Bullivas around and probably encouraged him to stay. He has two kickers on scholarship. Bullivas certainly struggled at the points last year, but did pretty solidly in field goals. So at least you've had him on the road in the SEC. You've had him kicking in big games. DeLong, I'm still worried about that from the punting standpoint. It wasn't great. I think it was around 38 yards per punt against Southern Miss. Needs more hang time. But when Reichert returns, I would expect him just to handle, extra points and field goals. I don't know that Coach Saban would push him because I believe he injured it on a kickoff. You've got Bullivas there to kick off, and just, Jeff Banks and those guys are going to have to earn their money and help DeLong improve. And or unless we see maybe another Mike Bernier is still on the team. He punted some last year, but it seems as though they think they can still develop DeLong.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, for people that don't know what it is, I mean, it's up in your hip socket. It's what connects your, the tendon, the main tendon that connects. If you've ever grabbed your foot back behind you and pulled it upward towards your buttocks, I mean, that's where you feel tension and pressure in your hip socket. That's what your hip flexor is, and that punting motion. Even the kicking motion, I mean, it's going to be a chore for him to get through this. I don't know what his injury history is in high school, what all he did or didn't have to overcome, but yeah, I would get Bullivas out there and DeLong and, ride them as long as they can. I don't see a scenario on the schedule anytime soon where you should, press Reichert to come back anytime soon. So, give him plenty of time and let that thing heal up completely before he gets back out there. And hopefully it won't be on a rainy, cool game.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly it's Alabama's had to battle the heat, and they're going to have to battle the heat again on Saturday with this 2:30 kick against the Ole Miss Rebels. And William, I know you talked about it briefly, but what is your expectations based upon, we don't know how severe it is, but on who you speak with and just your gut, when do you think we'll see DJ Dale back?
It won't be this week, and I'd be surprised if it's against Texas A&M. That's not a tough one, but it's a painful one, and it just depends on what his pain threshold is. You know, I think they've got some young guys along with him. I mean, he's a young guy himself, but I think they could go with Phil Mathis and Barmore and. Let them get their reps and get a little bit more practice during games and stuff, and then let Dale have some time to get 100% because, they're going to need him once they, get closer towards the first part of November. But, from looking at the schedule, I don't see a need to press him back into service anytime soon either.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if he can make it back by A&M or if he – but I think, William, as we've seen – this Alabama schedule is backloaded. If they can get by A&M, and I think we all believe they should, A&M has been disappointing so far. It's still going to be a difficult environment. But the schedule, there's another bye worked in there also. I hate to say to put it in these kind of terms, but this basically is, you got two scrimmages coming up with Tennessee and Arkansas at this point.
Oh, for sure. And, the atmosphere at A&M is, especially if this heat doesn't subside, that can be a tough place to play. But, they were overwhelmed pretty early against Auburn, who I'm still not convinced is a great football team. I mean, they've got a great D-line and pretty nifty with trick plays. But, I think the offense is still inconsistent and looking for some consistency, but, certainly they got a great D line and the sprinter Schwartz is a threat every time he touches the ball. But, and as I sit here and I say this, them Kellen Mond will probably look like Johnny Football, which he certainly hasn't come close to looking like, in the two games I've seen him in this year, very inconsistent, seems to get rattled, struggles with accuracy. I hate to jump ahead, past Ole Miss, but I would add that as a third scrimmage, basically, from what I've seen out of them this year. I think the schedule sets up favorably. You just got to hope nobody else, significant gets hurt. And, let the young guys get in there. I thought they did a good job of situationally substituting guys in there early. They left the first team O-line in for a little bit when Mac Jones came in, left Najee in, on offense. Seemed to be a little bit more free-flowing with the substitutions on defense. But, there's a lot of young guys on that defense that need the reps. So they're not going to, yank those guys as quickly as they would, three- and four-year starters. So, I think the month of October and certainly the last weekend of September setting up very favorably for the team from a development standpoint, getting guys more experience and it's going to be fun to watch. I enjoy that. That's my favorite really part of the season is, against some of these, teams that are coming up in the next, 5 weeks is, watching those young guys get in there and, make their mistakes, learn from them, learning how to play fast. And, we'll get to see a lot of that over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we certainly will. And speaking of young guys, we're going to see Christian Barmore, I think, more and more, especially with DJ Dale's injury. He's been a big topic of conversation. He predictably, after sitting out the half with a bogus targeting call against South Carolina, played with his hair on fire and really brought it, had three tackles. They were all to end the game. He was playing definitely with an edge. I think we're just going to continue to see more and more of him as long as he can be assignment sound, William. DJ Dale out. I think Mathis will probably slide back inside. We know that LeBryan Ray is going to be out for a while. Your thoughts on Barmore? I think it's a golden opportunity for him to continue over this next month I mean, he could end up being a guy that you didn't even think about at the start of the season that could be very important in November.
Well, you know, I think also, too, I mean, when you look at the type of offenses, you know, I mean, the offenses that they're going to be playing, there's not going to be, you know, except for, you know, first and 10 and third and short situations, you're not going to see the base defense out there that much. So, you know, why not give those reps to Mathis and Barmore to begin with? And like we talked about earlier, continue to rest Dale. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Barmore is a guy that, you know, I think is, you know, kind of following along the same path that Raekwon Davis did. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he was physically ready to play, you know, when he got there, just, you know, emotionally, he just needed to get adjusted to college life and, you know, toughen up a little bit like a lot of young players do. And, you know, they've kind of had his name circled in pencil for quite some time as somebody that they felt like was going to, you know, had the potential to be a really good player. And he's starting to live up to that on Saturday. So, yeah, I expect to see more and more of him. I think he'll get better and better the more comfortable he gets. You know, and, you know, with somebody with his physical abilities, you know, even if he's not ready, emotionally, you know, to play sound on every play, a lot of guys can overcome that with what they're able to do physically. So I think he certainly fits that description, and you'll see more and more of them as these, you know, next 4 or 5 weeks, you know, come through the end of September and October. I think you're going to see a lot of them. He's a guy that, you know, kind of like, you know, when Quinnen Williams, you know, his first year to get on the field, you know, he wasn't a starter, but every time he was in there, you know, you saw him flash and make some things happen. And you're starting to see that, you know, on a weekly basis from Barmore as well.
Yeah, you really are. And I'm anxious to see him continue to develop. And speaking of developing, and then I thought it was interesting this week. It looks like Nick Saban, and he always finds roles for guys. We've talked about the tight end spot and the blocking not being what it needed to be. Well, they added a new wrinkle against Southern Miss, and going forward, looks like he is going to have a role as a blocking tight end. That's Kendall Randolph, the backup offensive guard. He's also seen time at center and tackle, been very versatile. I believe now he's number 85. They've changed his number. He was number 60. He had seen some time on the O-line, but it looks like a Brandon Green type role is going to be, made for Kendall Randolph to be that edge blocking tight end. A lot of people thought they might do this with Matt Womack, and maybe there was another player or two that came to mind. But your thoughts on moving Kendall Randolph to blocking tight end?
Yeah, thank you for. I was sitting here trying to rack my brain and remember Brandon Green's name, because that's
He played for the Birmingham Iron this spring, and he was actually in Huntsville some. I know he was Reggie Ragland's roommate. He helped out with Reggie Ragland's football camp at 97.7 The Zone helped put on. So got a chance to speak with him a little bit. Yeah, you remember he caught the pass against LSU in 2014 to beat them in overtime. That helped set that up.
Yeah, and you know, similar body types, and you know, certainly Randolph has, you know, got the same athleticism. So, you know, take your hats off to the coaching staff for, you know, A, recognizing the need, but also kind of putting the right athlete there, you know, that can pull that off. So that's going to help the offense. You know, you want to see somebody out there that at least the, you know, the defense has to you know, give a second thought to as far as putting him out into the passing game and stuff. And I think he's able to do that in certain situations, certainly a lot more so than Matt Womack is. You know, and I still think you'll probably see some, you know, tackle over formations out of Matt Womack or whoever. You know, they most offensive coordinators these days like to have that in their arsenal, to have a heavy package on goal line and short yardage. But I'm glad to see the young man get an opportunity. And you know, surprisingly enough, if you look at he had kind of worked his way up the depth chart onto the second team offensive line before the season started. So, you know, he's making progress. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, in the day and age of, you know, 5 stars and 4 stars, they're considered busts if they're not starters by the end of their first year on campus. People tend to give up on him. you know, especially bigger people like that. You know, it takes them longer to develop, longer to get used to the speed of the game. And, you know, I think you're starting to see that, that happen with Randolph. And I'm interested to see how this thing plays out the rest of the season.
Yeah, me too. I'm anxious to see. And I'm happy for him because he's overcome knee and Achilles injuries, William. He's been a guy that's been banged up quite a bit. He missed most of last season with an Achilles. I believe he's a redshirt sophomore. So it allows him to create a role for himself. I know they want to recruit more tight ends, but if he takes to this and really does a good job blocking on the edge, then he's probably found a role for himself the rest of his career because Brandon Green did that for much of the rest of his career also. And it allows guys like Miller Forrestall, eventually Cameron Latu. I know they really want more blocking, you know, out of Major Tennyson, but Cameron Latu, as we said, Miller Forrestall, potentially Arik Gilbert in the recruiting class. It allows those guys to make plays as H-backs. And also, they Jahlil Billings, he saw some playing time. He struggled blocking. But I think he's still eventually going to redshirt, get bigger, and have a chance to be a more of a dynamic tight end. So, and improve the athleticism there. So a nice role being carved out by Kendall Randolph from my community here in Madison from Bob Jones High School. So happy for him, and hopefully going forward he's going to help this football team. Speaking of someone that's returning that can help, we've got Deonte Brown coming back, will be eligible this week. He's been practicing at right guard, and I got a funny feeling from hearing Nick Saban in the teleconference this afternoon, also left, probably both places. The only thing that's a little bit discouraging, William, is I hear that he's not really even close to his, the what they want for his playing weight. Last year, it looked like he had finally slimmed down into the 330s, and we know he started five games and was dominant. I'm hearing that he's well north of that right now. So hearing Nick Saban talk about him having to earn the spot makes a lot of sense, but it's disappointing that the young man's a little heavy right now.
Yeah, I've heard the same report, and you know the number that's been tossed out to me. I just don't even see how that's physically possible. I mean, it's not like he's not been practicing, not been conditioning, not been working out with the team, and you know, especially with the emphasis that that staff puts on, you know, conditioning and nutrition.
Yeah.
You know, this is starting to look like a. Talk about a blast from the past, but you know, a mid-90s version of Jamie Carter, who was you know, prone to order, you know, three or four pizzas and you know, 100 wings, you know, Bryant Hall when nobody was looking. And you know, we've seen it with other players, Brandon Hill a few years ago.
Yes.
I just don't understand how this happens, especially when you're suspended, you're staring down the barrel of you know, getting your starting job back. And you know, that's your one, you know, kind of weakness in your tool belt is your weight. And you'd think that would be an emphasis, and he'd pay more attention to that than anything on his, you know, time away from the starting lineup. But it is what it is. You know, he's got to manage that and you know, get it under control. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, maybe with, you know, being back in the rotation, and, you know, getting more reps, obviously, you know, when they get into game prep, if you're not going to play, you know, they're not going to give you the reps because you're not eligible. But, you know, maybe they can get that, you know, 15, 20 pounds of bad weight off of him in the next couple weeks. And, you know, by the time mid-October gets here, he can be back down closer to that 350 range where he needs to be.
Yeah, and William, I've got to ask you, as someone who played offensive line, and of course you – played Jamie Carter from the state of Mississippi. How hard is it to lose weight during the season?
You know, I mean, it's hard for me to even relate to that because I had the opposite problem. I had problem keeping weight on, but it wasn't a problem in the off season. But you know, God, during the season, you know, when you practice and then the conditioning that you do afterwards, and you know, with school, you know, it's a lot easier for him now because. Of the emphasis they place on nutrition and making sure these kids are putting – so, you know, there's a sign in the hallway of the football complex that Amy Bragg, you know, posts every year. You know, if I see you walking down the hallway, I want to see a drink in your hand and some food in your mouth. And, you know, there's healthy options. I can assure you there's not Krispy Kreme donuts and you know, pizza slices, you know, for people to grab at will. You know, it's canisters of nuts and protein shakes and, you know, healthy choices. So, you know, really the difficult thing is for, you know, guys, you know, like a Damian Dalcourt that needs to gain weight, and you know, guys that are, you know, much longer and longer limbed and taller, like an Alex Leatherwood, you know, who would, you know, both be considered hard gainers. You know, it's more difficult for those guys to keep their weight up, you know, versus, you know, something like this that could be, you know, done with extra cardio exercise and, you know, certainly, you know, take all the simple carbs away from them and, you know, all the other stuff that tends to add weight to people at any age. So it's disappointing, I guess, more than anything, because that's the one area that he needs to work on. He's, you know, he's blessed in so many areas with such a large and powerful lower body. I mean, the guy can generate power at the point of attack as good as anybody I've ever seen. You know, I think the Nate Newton comparison that I've heard tossed around a lot is fair because they're built similarly. They both, you know, have you know, weight problems that they struggle with. But, you know, it's a struggle. I mean, you know, when you're hot, especially when it's still 100 degrees out there, the last thing you want to do when you get done is rehydrate and eat. And, you know, if you lose, you know, more than 5 pounds during a practice, they give you this syrup that you have to drink, and it's not pleasant to choke down. So, you know, there's a science to it, just like everything else. And, you know, it's a difficult job for that coaching staff to, you know, every player has, you know, got their own individualized program, and, you know, they're tasked with following that, and the people that manage them in the weight room and, you know, the nutrition aspect of it. I mean, it's a full-time job to make sure that, you know, certain players are getting, you know, 6,000-7,000 calories a day, and somebody that needs to lose weight, you know, for a 370-pound person without any exercise added to it, you know, to maintain that weight, they need to be eating less than 3,700 calories a day. So, you know, that's not a lot of food for somebody that size. So, you know, when you get asked to do that, it affects your energy levels and your strength levels. And although he's got plenty of strength to spare, so, but, you know, it's a job, man. It's a full-time job, you know, whatever side of that stick you're on, whether it's trying to keep your weight up or lose it.
Well, in this offensive line, we talked about it briefly. We thought they had their strongest effort. What did you think of Chris Owens overall, and do you still see a guy like Dalcourt beating him out? Dalcourt didn't play as much as I thought he might in the Southern Miss game, but he still got in that second half. Of course, we didn't see Deontay Brown. We won't until this week. Evan Neal started, seemed to, you know, I think he made a couple mistakes, but he played better. The two tackles were really good, especially Jedrick Wills. Dickerson solid. I guess the one worry continues to be Chris Owens, and then decide if Evan Neal is going to be able to hold off a guy like Deontay Brown. What did you think of the center spot, and what about Dalcourt going forward?
You know, I mean, I think the left guard, center, right guard positions are probably still in flux. I mean, you know, Owens probably had his best game of the year so far. There wasn't the you know, the glaring mistakes like there was at South Carolina and earlier in the year, but, you know, the level of competition was also diminished as well. Mm-hmm. You still got to kind of worry about him, you know, against Texas A&M. They've got some very talented interior defensive line players. It's also, you know, going to Dalcourt, you know, that's certainly not the best environment to throw a true freshman out there and see if he can win the job during a game, you know, considering the atmosphere, number one. Mm-hmm. the level of talent uptick you're going to see at the defensive tackle spots from Texas A&M. But I really like what I've seen from him. You know, in a perfect world, you know, if there wasn't the inconsistencies at center with Owens, I think you'd like to give him his four games this year and, you know, stack him away in the weight room with Scott Cochran for the rest of the year and let him get a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger. But he is blessed with, you know, having the ability to understand leverage and angles, and he's got a good base. You know, he's powerfully built in his lower body already. Probably just needs to improve his upper body strength a little bit. But, you know, I wouldn't discount him being a factor. Unless somebody else or Owens himself can you know, get more consistent against good competition, I think you'll continue to see Damian Dalcourt. I think he's probably shown that he needs to play. And, certainly I think he's, got a pencil mark circled around him as the center of the future. If that's the case, keep giving him reps and meaningful games and let him continue to develop. And I think that's probably what you'll see from him. Now, how that left guard, right guard job, ends up being, I personally think where you'll probably see the change is at the right guard spot if it takes place with Deontay Brown. I think Evan Neal, despite the freshman mistakes, is just too physically gifted to keep off the field at this point. Unless he just has a meltdown, and that could happen at College Station. It's a tough place to play, and it's going to be he's going to have some talented guys that he's going to have to deal with. But I've been pleased with the progress of the offensive line. I think they've certainly gotten better, since the Duke game.
Yeah.
Still a little bit of questions with Owens, obviously, but maybe that can continue to solidify as well. We'll have to wait and see. But, I think they're coming along. There's been some questions raised that have been, delivered to me off of social media. Is the zone blocking scheme too complicated? They've been running the zone blocking scheme down there since I was in school. It's nothing new. Certainly probably Kyle Flood's version of it's different than Brent Keyes, and Brent Keyes was a little bit different than Mario Cristobal. So it's, everybody has their way of doing things and wanting things done, but there's nothing new about what they're trying to do. It's just the fact that there's so many new people, at four different spots. You've got four new starters, at their position. So, it just takes time for that continuity to develop and people to learn how to communicate with the guys on either side of them.
Yeah, it really will. And I know it's unusual unless there's an injury, but if Evan Neal continues to get better, could we see maybe Deontay Brown settle in as a backup, or do you, or if he can get his weight under control, do you believe that he'll eventually win a spot back in the first five?
I think now, after the, we've got to wait and see what his conditioning looks like Saturday. But I would be shocked if he doesn't end up, in the next couple of weeks, ended up being that right guard. I mean, it's he's just too good at what he does. I think him and Jedrick Wills, can be a devastating run blocking tandem over there. And, he's probably, when he's in shape and he's, good to go and at full speed, I just think he's too talented to keep off the field. I mean, you're talking about a guy that if he'll take care of his body, can play football as long as his body allows him to.
Yeah, I it's going to be interesting because, Landon Dickerson's been pretty good thus far and been all SEC, offensive lineman of the week. So I would have thought that Evan Neal would be the one, the odd man out maybe. And I still kind of feel that way. It just depends on his mental errors and if he continues to get better. But, of course, who's to say Landon Dickerson might not see some time at right, or excuse me, left guard also. We'll see. But it'll be interesting to see whether Deontay, because Deontay spent most of his time at left guard a year ago. But as we said, and during media viewing, he's been at right guard. But I believe, just reading between the lines with Nick Saban, that Deontay's been seeing time at both spots. So we'll continue to monitor that going forward, no question about it. And then overall, I thought, as you said, Najee Harris had the first 100-yard running game. This is really hard to believe, William. Since LSU early November, Damian Harris, that's the last 100-yard game for an Alabama running back. He has 14 carries for 110 yards and a 5-yard touchdown catch. I thought Brian Robinson looked pretty good. Was a little surprised we didn't see Keelan Robinson, but we've heard nothing from Coach Saban about an injury of any kind. Jerome Ford and Jadarius Townsend saw reps, with Ford getting a touchdown. But the running game and the offensive line and the running backs are going to kind of be – it's going to be a hand-in-hand thing. But I thought, as you mentioned earlier in the show, that the running game was better against Southern Mississippi. I say this. If this offense – I think they got 175 yards rushing – if they could do that going forward, no guarantees, but if they could, I think Alabama's offense would be unstoppable. They don't have to rush for 200 yards with this group.
No, I think probably 150 yards is the benchmark that I would look for. And you know, it doesn't really surprise me that it's been since last November that you know, Alabama's had a 100-yard individual rusher with the way they rotate backs in and out of there. Certainly the schedule that they played against the defenses in November and in the college football playoffs last year has a lot to do with that as well. You know, certainly it was a little bit of a head scratcher, you know, in the first couple of games this year. But with the quarterback and the wide receivers and what, you know, Steve Sarkisian is trying to do offensively, I think 150 is kind of the benchmark that you need to look for. Because, you know, when you got a running back running the football, those four thoroughbred wide receivers are blocking people, not doing what they need to be doing.
Yeah, and before William and I start talking recruiting, because there was a major piece of the puzzle added this week, I wanted to bring Thomas Watts into the conversation and talk about Texas A&M, because I know Thomas watches a lot of these other games very closely as well, especially when Alabama has an upcoming opponent. Ole Miss, of course, is someone that we'll get him to break down a little bit as well. But Texas A&M is going to be the road trip coming up. October the 12th, pardon me. We'll delve into it even more after the bye week. But just before we go on our bye this coming week, I wanted to get some initial thoughts from Thomas. Now that we've seen Texas A&M in not just one big game, but now they flopped in two big games. Thomas, your thoughts on the Aggies and right now the $75 million man, Jimbo Fisher.
This was always thought to be somewhat of a transition year, but I thought A&M was going to be better than they've shown thus far. The big problem is A&M has functionally no rushing attack. You know, if you look at the Clemson and the Auburn games, I don't think they got over 100 yards total in those games combined. And that's just not going to get it done. Yes, Kellen Mond ended up almost throwing A&M back into the game, but the offensive line for Texas A&M does that offense absolutely no favors. They get no push in the run game, and Kellen Mond is constantly harassed, which that suddenly means that Kellen Mond has fallen off a cliff in terms of productivity. Overall, I don't think Jimbo Fisher is justifying his $75 million thus far, because I'm kind of in the same boat as William. Auburn's offense is... It kind of reminds me of a spiced up Alabama offense under early Nick Saban, in that it's going to have fits and starts, and then it's going to pop one occasionally. But if you get into a shootout, good luck keeping up. That's what I see Auburn's offense as. And Auburn's defense, I mean, great defensive line, but I don't think that defense wants any part of LSU or Alabama. I think that will get ugly quick. But anyway, back to the A&M thing. It's certainly taken a lot of the luster off of that game. I thought that was going to be the time that Alabama really started to gear up and speed up and start reaching that crescendo that they need to hit come December to be able to perform at the highest level. Assuming, of course, SEC championship, college football playoff, blah, blah, blah. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But overall, I think you have to call them disappointing. And in their defense, I will say one thing. Part of their disappointment is that LSU offensively has come out of absolutely nowhere to set an SEC points record through the first four games of this season at 231 points.
Right.
So it's kind of the thing that's it's based on context. I think A&M would easily be the second best team in the East. Unfortunately, particularly with their loss to Auburn, they're going to be fighting for fourth best team in the West. And if the ball bounces incorrectly against a good, or at least can run the ball effectively, young Mississippi State team, then you could look at fifth in the West. So I think the context is important here, and we'll talk more about it once I have a chance to really get into the guts of this football team. But by and large, if the A&M offensive line is as useless as they were against the Clemson Tigers and the Auburn Tigers, lots of Tigers, yeah, whatever, then Alabama's going to win going away. That's my thoughts 3 weeks out, Drew.
Well, and I wanted to run something by both you and William. I truly respect Matt Wyatt. He's a great analyst. He has a great YouTube channel. He has a show, of course, the Matt Wyatt Show, which is 12-2 on ESPN 105.9 in Jackson, Mississippi. Was up for a long time on Super Talk Mississippi. Is the color analyst for the Mississippi State Football Radio Network, and was a quarterback. He's from Prattville, Alabama, and he's always been very objective when breaking things down. He said something today on Talking Ball that really caught me off guard. And let me preface this by saying, you know, Scott Tyson and I had a chance to be around Joe Burrow and ask him some questions at SEC Media Days, and that dude's very impressive. And I did say I thought going into the year he was a top three quarterback in the league and a guy that's a great leader, a gutty guy, and maybe being a little undervalued. Now, he's gotten off to an unbelievable start, 6 touchdowns in the last game at Vanderbilt. But today, Matt Wyatt said something that really caught me off guard. He believes if Joe Burrow continues to produce like he has in the first month of the season, that he is someone, and I thought about him getting drafted, but I never thought of this. He believes he could go higher in the NFL draft than Tua Tagovailoa. And that, to me, I've seen Tua enough. I've seen Joe Burrow. While I respect Burrow as a competitor and a player, let me be clear. I haven't seen enough of him this year. I need to go back and watch a couple of their big games. But I don't put him in the same stratosphere as Tua. And I wanted to get first, Thomas, your thoughts, and then Williams on that.
So, will Joe Burrow get drafted higher than Tua Tagovailoa?
And that would mean going number one overall, in my opinion.
We're talking top five pick.
Yeah.
I think so there's a lot. This is a hard argument to make for me because, yes, past success is potentially an indicator of future success. But the thing about LSU is show me a defense that they've played with a pulse.
Right.
You know, the best defense they've played is Texas. And, you know, the next time a Big 12 defense should scare anybody with a functioning brain will be the first. So if LSU comes out and drops 50 on Florida and then drops 50 on Alabama, even in a loss, because I frankly think Alabama could score 70 on LSU's defense because that is a terrible unit. That's the sort of stuff it's going to end up having to take. And one of the things that he has to do is stay healthy throughout the year and maintain elite level production that we've already seen from Tua Tagovailoa for a year and a half, essentially. So is it completely impossible? I don't think so. But there's a lot more that has to go into this calculus because he has to pass Justin Herbert. He has to pass Tua Tagovailoa. You know, Jake Fromm's going to get some buzz for first round, even though he'll probably get back half of the first round. And one of the things about where these quarterbacks go is what's the draft order look like? Because, you know, last week, Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, their number one pick, Jameis Winston, looked like he had a pulse for the first time in a month.
Yeah.
The Dolphins are literally lighting half the city on fire to burn down their franchise. So we have no idea what's going on there. And you don't have as many teams that are quarterback needy right now because so many quarterbacks have come into the NFL recently. So there are so many factors with this that it's hard to really project going forward. Is it completely crazy given the first month? No, but I would be as surprised if he passed Tua as if we have this conversation in December and Joe Burrow came back down to earth against a good Florida secondary or a good Alabama defense, particularly on the back end, and only scored, you know, 24, 31 points. And that's really not going to get it done, if you ask me, in terms of raw stats production, Drew.
Yeah, and William, I'll get your thoughts on it. And I have to admit, his stats are, you know, staggering. I mean, in four games, he's 100 of 124, 80% completion percentage, nearly 81, 1,520 yards, yards per attempt, 12.3, and then 17 TDs and only 2 INTs. So he's been unbelievable, but I still don't think he's the pure passer that Tua is. Your thoughts, William, on this LSU offense? And to me, I'll be honest with you, I think there's been so much talk about Alabama's defense not being very good. this year and struggling. I think the LSU defense is falling off a table. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Thomas, you know, kind of laid the table out the way it needs to be laid. I mean, first of all, you got to wait and see what, you know, each team in the top 10 in the draft is going to be looking for. I mean, you know, if depending on what their needs are. I mean, if there's a Quinnen Williams out there, nobody's going to take two quarterbacks in the top five. You know, if there's a lockdown corner, nobody's going to take two quarterbacks in the top five. You know, if there's a, you know, a future NFL Hall of Famer at left tackle, nobody's going to take two quarterbacks in the top five picks. So that's just, you know, ridiculous to even speculate on at this point. Secondly, I think that LSU is asking Joe Burrow to do this stuff. I mean, I'd have to go back and look at their stats, but
yeah,
you know, are they having to score these type of points and make these passes, you know, because their rushing game's inept? Are they having to do it to protect, you know, like you just said, Drew, a less than, you know, average LSU defense, certainly under Dave Aranda? You know, is the lack of recruiting on that side of the ball, which, you know, Nick Saban is, you know, taking them to the woodshed and just in their own state on over the last, you know, 10 years. Or I guess five, you can't really factor in the first five. They're not there anymore. But would I take what I've seen from Joe Burrow right now over what I've seen from Tua in the last 2 years? Absolutely not. I'd say, let's revisit this conversation, you know, the week before, the week after Thanksgiving, and see how they're still stacking up statistically. And I don't think you can use, you know, stats as a do-all, end-all indicator on which one's the better pro prospect at quarterback. Now, I personally think when it comes down to draft time, you might see some teams shy away because Tua's barely 6 foot tall. We'll have to wait and see how that works out. But yeah, if I'm an NFL GM or if I'm a college head football coach, you know, which one of those two guys do I take first based on what I've seen from the last two seasons? I take Tua. No questions asked.
Yeah, and I do too. I just think he's a better pure passer. Though, I mean, I'm sure Joe is now, the system is a short control passing game and it's playing to his strengths. And certainly he does have a passing ability. I just never have seen anyone as accurate as Tua, and I know his completion percentage says 80% as far as Joe Burrow, but I still would take Tua and some of the throws you see him make and the growth we've seen of him as a quarterback in year two. But it certainly is an interesting topic of conversation. You're still going to watch Joe Burrow going forward, especially in some of their bigger games, because they're going to play football teams, in my opinion, better than Texas down the road, because the SEC is down, but it's still extremely top-heavy. There's five at least really good football teams in this league, and I think we're going to see some head-to-head matchups that are going to be very, very interesting to watch. But now, William, I wanted to change the topic back to recruiting. We kind of were hinting about this last week on Bam's radio. It came down. He ended up taking his official visit this weekend, along with Alfred Collins, defensive lineman from the state of Texas, who I've been told is the best defensive lineman in Texas, but his mother is a former Longhorn basketball player. Could be difficult to get him away from the Longhorns. And then Reggie Grimes, someone we're very familiar with, 1999 SEC champion. He and his squad were honored. It's the 20th year reunion at the game this weekend. So Reggie Grimes Jr. was visiting. Still not sure Alabama might have room for him. I think Reggie really wants his son to play at Alabama, but the numbers are getting so tight. But the biggest visitor of all was Bryce Young from Modern Day High School, top rated dual threat quarterback in the country. And William, I said this is a game changer on Twitter, because I think what the job Steve Sarkisian did to flip this young man, and you know your history in recruiting, you know Modern Day is traditionally, especially for quarterbacks, a pipeline to Southern California. I mean, you've had the Matt Barkley's, you've had the JT Daniels. There's been several that have gone from Modern Day to the University of Southern California and been very good players. And so they've had a pipeline there, but looks like Alabama broke that with Bryce Young. I think Tua had a lot to do with it and his success over the last two-plus seasons. But Bryce Young now has officially flipped Alabama, And this could be the impetus, because a lot of people thought Clemson had the top class locked up. I still think they're going to be difficult to overtake, but this development certainly gives Alabama a chance to once again be atop those rankings. Your thoughts on Bryce Young and his flip from Southern California to Alabama?
Well, shit, first of all, you got to pat yourself on the back. I mean, you kind of, made your call last week on the show thinking it could happen sooner rather than later, and I thought it was going to be later rather than sooner. Certainly I think it's, one of the worst-kept secrets in recruiting. Steve Sarkisian has had this thing locked up since this summer. I think he's the key component there in getting Bryce Young on campus. I mean, he's had nothing but outstanding things to say about the young man. Feels like he's got a great chance of winning the starting job as a true freshman, considering the fact he's going to be an early enrollee. Certainly, that's going to have to be won on the field. But, just a dynamic quarterback. Some people are saying he's one of the best high school quarterbacks they've ever seen. Can make all the throws, can make all the runs. When the pocket breaks down, you could even design a dual threat offense around him, because he is a legit, threat to run the football at any time. But I think, when you look at the timing of it, I think this puts more pressure on his family out in California, but it certainly is going to benefit the University of Alabama. It gives them a chance to, show some of these other wide receivers that they'd like to add, certainly one of the tight ends, hey, this is going to be your quarterback of the future. It gives him an opportunity to recruit some of these players, at least now openly. Maybe not through direct messaging on social media, and gives them a kind of a cornerstone to continue to add offensive players to in this recruiting class, and he could help even lure some players on the defensive side of the football as well. But I think it's a big bonus and benefit to Nick Saban and the program to get him on board and in the fold this early in his senior season, especially with him being an early enrollee. I really did. I thought he was going to, kind of go the T.J. Yeldon route to try and make things easier on himself and his family out there, and kind of, post-Thanksgiving, kind of fade into the woods and use the benefit of the cover of the dead period to kind of do it in. But, kudos to the kid and his family for having the courage to do it. And, get this, really, really bad secret out there in the public domain, because it's been Alabama's been in the clubhouse as the leader with this thing for quite some time now. And so I'm happy for the young man. I'm happy for the program. Looks like we've got another really active player's father on social media from some of the stuff that's been forwarded to me. So this could be quite fun.
Yeah. And then, and I watched him a little bit against St. Francis before their bye week, and he came to visit, and I think he threw for close to 250 in that game. He ran for 4 touchdowns and over 100 yards. He's a very dynamic player. Now, he is under 6 feet tall. You talked about Tua being, maybe a shade over 6 feet, maybe right at 6 feet. I think Bryce is even shorter than that. And then, of course, so is Talia. Talia is under 6 feet tall. His brother, who is going to, I think, redshirt this year for Alabama. Mac Jones will be going into his redshirt junior season. So it looks like William, and again, Paul Tyson will be there. I just don't think he's nearly of the caliber of the other three. It looks like a three-way dance at quarterback. Could you see a scenario? We saw Tua play a lot as a freshman, but we've only had one true freshman start. That was Jalen Hurts. We're going to continue to see Talia develop. He threw his first pass this past Saturday to Slade Bolden. But talk about the early on. I mean, I know we're putting the cart before the horse a little bit, but we all believe Tua is going to, going to take the NFL riches after this season. He would be crazy almost not to. What are your thoughts on a three-way dance with Mac Jones, Talia, and Bryce Young?
There's so many variables there. I mean, certainly I think, Young is going to have to get a little bit more, physically developed. I don't think at his current physical stature he could hold up to, a full season of SEC football. But we've all seen, how quickly those bodies can change, once they get on campus and, you know, get ingrained in the strength and conditioning program and certainly the nutrition program. And I do think by next August, you'll see a drastically different looking player from a physical standpoint. You know, and I think, you know, Mac Jones continues to get better. He's supposedly has a very good grasp of this offense under Steve Sarkisian. Sarkisian likes him a lot. He likes a lot of the things that he brings to the table. I think Talia certainly brings a lot of good qualities to the table as well. It could be a nasty little three-way race, come spring practice, March 2020. But we'll just have to wait and see. There's way, way too much time, and you just have to wait and see, how SEC ready Bryce Young really is. High school football in the suburbs of California is a lot different than what he's going to face when he gets to Tuscaloosa. But I think the pecking order is going to be on the first day of spring practice next year. Mac Jones won. Talia number two, Paul Tyson three, and Bryce Young four. Now, that's probably going to change and probably change quickly, but at least on the back end, I totally agree with you. I don't think Tyson, at least from what I've seen so far, is going to, push for a starting job or the backup job next year. It's a good problem to have, and certainly if they can hang on to, the May kid, for 2020, who's an extremely talented quarterback in his own right, they could be really, really loaded for bear at that position if they can manage to, hang on to all of them.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I do think there'll be some attrition. If Mac doesn't win the job, I would expect him to graduate transfer somewhere else. I wouldn't blame him. We'll see. He's shown some improvement. I do think the reason we haven't seen a lot of Talia was strategic by Coach Saban. They were trying to close the deal, and Bryce Young still has to sign. So they want Bryce Young in the in the fold. They want him to compete. He certainly has a unique skill set, and all credit to Steve Sarkisian. And that's the big thing that I was telling everybody, that was the difference between him and Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin is an outstanding play caller. Lane Kiffin is kind of a savant. He can adjust in the heat when there's chaos around him and he's in a big game and everything's going haywire. He does a great job of being able to adjust on the fly and tweak his play calling and get matchups that he likes and exploit them. But the one thing and a couple of things that Steve Sarkisian is superior is, I think he's superior as a quarterback coach and as a recruiter. And I don't think there's any question about it. And I think he's a good enough play caller. I really like the offense he's designed. I think the players do too. And I think that's why. And I think I've always said that one of the biggest reasons he came back to Alabama was, one, he wants another chance at a head coaching job on the college level. Nick Saban will afford him that opportunity. And I think he's just a better fit on the college level. And he had a great relationship with the Tagovailoas. And, of course, as we've seen with Bryce Young, it can't be understated. I mean, let's be honest. All these dudes would be at Southern Cal if he was the head coach at Southern Cal. So timing is everything, and Alabama was able to take advantage of it. And now, as William said, hopefully this will be a domino effect. They need Arik Gilbert. And I'm going to tell you, I went and watched another kid that Alabama needs to sign, William. I don't know if you studied his tape yet. Probably should. I'll say maybe before our next show, I'll send it to you. Check it out. I went and watched him play this past Friday. There's a kid in Florence, Alabama, and Alabama's already let one great player from Florence get away in Errol Thompson, the linebacker at Mississippi State. They let Monty Rice get away to Georgia at James Clemens. But I watched those two teams play this past Friday night, and there's a young man named D. Beckwith, who is a quarterback athlete, but really he's going to be an H-back tight end. He's a 6'4", 215-pound quarterback and wide receiver right now. They put the ball in his hands at wide receiver to run it. At quarterback to run him a lot. He'll throw the ball some, but it's mainly just because he's their most dynamic player. But he also plays receiver, and I think he has a chance to be another Irv Smith at tight end. He has an offer from Florida, has an offer from Ole Miss, Nebraska. Texas A&M has been after him hard. Alabama has come after him. Auburn offered him, but I think they're also recruiting some other tight ends. He's somebody that I think You look at him down the road after he redshirts, you know, he would be 250-plus pounds and be a matchup nightmare. He catches the ball well, and I really like the way he played with physicality. And his team lost 51-20, but he played his ass off and was playing through the whistle and playing very physical, running guys over even when his team was completely out of the game, which impressed me a lot. And he's got enough athleticism to have a Florida basketball offer in addition to football. So I saw him play basketball last year, William, and he really impressed me. But I had never seen him play football till this year. He came out last year and played, and so he's still kind of raw when it comes to football. But I just think overall that the University of Alabama, they need to be monitoring this kid. And matter of fact, it's a golden opportunity for Kyle Flood, who recruits North Alabama. The Florence Falcons will host Jackson Bratton and the Muscle Shoals Trojans this Friday. And I'm going to try to send a word to Kyle Flood. He needs to be in Florence to watch these two kids, because I can tell you this, William. I personally don't think Alabama needs a third running back in this class. I like Kyle Edwards. I like Roydell Williams, who had a 200-yard game on Friday. I think they should sign an extra tight end in this class, because if you look at Miller Forrestall, he's a competitor, there's no question about it. But I'm not a huge fan of Major Tennyson. They've moved Randolph to that spot due to blocking purposes, but they're not really athletic and dynamic at the position right now. Only Billingsley seems to kind of have those kind of gifts, and he's very young. I personally think they've got Caden Clark committed, the kid from Ohio, but in my opinion, I think you should, if they can add Eric Gilbert, and I think they should make room for D. Beckwith. I think they need more athleticism at the tight end spot.
But, yeah, shoot me his huddle link. I should be able to watch it tomorrow afternoon. For sure I'll be able to watch it Friday after lunch. So I want to see this kid, and I'll let you know what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. We really appreciate it. Thanks for the time, William. We are getting ready to wrap up here as this hour has flown by. But, you know, it's always great when you're having great conversation. And we Alabama got a huge piece of that puzzle in recruiting in Bryce Young, and hopefully they're going to add, in my opinion, they've got 23 commitments. I think there's going to be some attrition, and I wouldn't be surprised if 7 to 8 more are added. And in the end, you'll see around 27 guys in this recruiting class, depending on the, you know, 3 or 4 guys, and maybe a gray shirt or two also worked out. We'll talk more about that later, but we are going to wrap up Bams Radio as we talked a little bit about the 49-7 and broke that down, the easy win for Alabama against Southern Mississippi, and what we saw, especially on the offensive line. And then we talked about the injury situation, and we took a small look. Thomas kind of broke down Texas A&M a little bit, but he'll do it in much more detail going forward. We always appreciate everybody for joining us. And as we're wrapping it up, just real briefly, William, we're going to let William go. We appreciate his time. I was going to get some brief thoughts from Thomas. Thomas, I know we didn't really break it down, but this to me, the last two games against Ole Miss have been 66-3 and 62-7. I don't know that it's going to be like that. I picked 52-10 today, or 52-14, somewhere around there. I think it's going to be another beat down in Tuscaloosa. What are your thoughts briefly on Ole Miss?
One of the interesting things about Ole Miss is, where's the mental state of that football team? Because that controversy at the end of the Ole Miss-California game is going to be tough to get over. Looking at it, I don't think the guy was in, but that's neither here nor there to what I think. It's that the review didn't happen. That's the kind of thing that could potentially stick with a team. And if you come out flat against Alabama, you're going to get lit up. One of the things coming out of the California game, just in general, is that the California quarterback had a really good game. Like, he played very well. I think he got hurt in the third quarter, but he was still a solid contributor if you just look at pure stats. So I think Alabama's going to wallop Ole Miss this upcoming Saturday. I just don't think that they have the Jimmies and Joes. One thing that I want to see, just personally, Drew, you know, if I were to lay out plans for Thomas Watts, what we're talking about on BAMS next Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whenever we have a chance to record, given our busy schedules, is I want to see progress cleaning up some of the gnarliness from the South Carolina game where there was confusion amongst parts of the defense. Because
right.
Ole Miss is going to try and hit Alabama with some tempo. And yeah. they're going to try and do a lot of what South Carolina did to negatively affect the Alabama defense. You know, Rich Rodriguez is over there, and he knows offense. You know, he's one of the progenitors of this entire spread movement. And, you know, that's going to pay dividends in terms of the whole, the whole offensive game plan. And that is, to me, where I want to see the Alabama team take a step forward. I do think Alabama will come out and put up 50, but the difference to me is between, you know, 52-21 and 52-10.
Yeah.
You know, at 52-10, Ole Miss had a little bit of success, you know, enough success to get a touchdown, maybe in the second quarter, maybe in the third quarter before Alabama started to rotate. And then the twos gave up some pithy yards at the end. But at 52-21, I mean, that's pretty well sustained success, or three explosive plays, or a combination therein. That's a completely different narrative. But overall, you know, earlier in the show, I know you and William both agreed that Alabama's coming into a series of scrimmages. And I personally think Ole Miss is in that boat. But, you know, for me as a fan wanting to see my team take a step forward this Saturday, I am going to be fairly nitpicky. And I want to see Alabama continue the trend that they started against Southern Miss, because I think that the Duke game for an opener was excellent. But Southern Miss was probably Alabama's biggest step in the right direction in terms of how the offense chose to attack and pile up yards and points, and how the defense was able to stymie what before Southern Miss played Alabama was a pretty solid offense. I mean, that group's going to be, you know, top 40 offense. That's nothing to shake a stick at in terms of ability to create pressure points and then create yards and turn that into points. So for me, the step forward is, does that continue, or do we see, you know, the bad angle drill that was a large chunk of the South Carolina game? Because if we see that, that's a problem. And luckily Alabama does have a bye to continue to work on that coming up. But still, that's something that as we start turning the page into October, we need to see less and less of. When I say we, I mean everybody, fans, coaches, players alike, need to see less of that, because yes, there are a lot of true freshmen starting, and yes, people are still acclimating to roles, but the buffer is very quickly fading, because as we turn into October, you know, that big matchup between Alabama LSU is just at the latest a month away. So that's really where I'm looking to see Alabama Ole Miss, the storyline that I'm interested in, both before the game and then to reassess after, Drew.
Yeah, we want to see some progress defensively and continued growth, and especially by all those freshmen that are playing. And as you said, good tackling, sound fundamentals, and this Ole Miss offense has really not been great. I mean, they were shut down by Memphis. They scored some points against Arkansas, but Arkansas is just pathetic. They're probably going to lose all eight SEC
fire
games.
Chad Morris. He yeah. gone. He gone.
And Bye. they weren't even good against Southeastern Louisiana, really, even though they scored 40. Yeah. This is a game, if Matt Corral is limited, that Alabama ought to win going away with John Rhys Plumlee, the true freshman QB. I know he played, Rhys Plumlee played pretty well in relief against, Cal, but this is not Cal. So Alabama should take care of this game. I think they're going to be impressive. They just need to avoid injuries finally. Start getting guys back instead of adding to that injury report. It'll be interesting to see if we see Terrell Lewis. Personally, I would think he may play on a pitch count, but we won't see a ton of him because he hyperextended his knee against South Carolina. He missed last week. I think he had a procedure done, just maybe a scope. But he's practicing, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him on kind of a limited basis. And not on a pitch count, but it'll be interesting to see. Well, anyway, we want to thank everyone for listening to BAMS Radio. William Redfish Barger with great thoughts. Thomas, as always, bringing it, and of course producing the show. I'm your co-host, Drew DeArmond. We really appreciate everybody for continuing to support us. The podcast will be it'll be either posted tonight or in the morning, so everyone enjoy it. We will be bringing you reaction, but I think we're going to take a week off next week. There is a week off for Alabama, so we'll take a week off as well. But then we'll come out guns blazing as Alabama gets ready to travel to Texas A&M. Thomas will have a chance to watch A&M and kind of break them down. He does a great job of that. He's going to, as he said earlier in the show, he's going to get a closer look at the Aggies. He'll give us his thoughts on their personnel. We'll get some thoughts from William Redfish Barger as well. And we might even have more recruiting news. So yeah, it won't be boring, that's for sure. But we'll definitely be coming to you in a couple of weeks with another edition of BAMS Radio, because this season there's two byes. There's usually just one, but there's going to be a couple of bye weeks. But we'll see you in a couple of weeks. But we continue to be appreciative of everybody supporting BAMS Radio. Good night, everybody. For Thomas Watts, William Redfish Barger, I'm Drew DeArmond. Roll Tide.